All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 86 in this American History program of History at Our House for the elementary class. Today, we are going to look at World War II, the really humongous one, in which America is not merely going to save Europe, but it's basically going to save the whole world. And so this is going to give new meaning to the idea of world police power, or international police power. Before we launch into the lecture, I want to talk about just a few things briefly concerning this last month of classes. So if you look on the calendar, we're in May, and we are headed towards the end of the year here. And so just a few things about that. One, for you live students, I would like to have a class picture, and so please look at the chat window. You will see that Mrs. Powell's email is there, and I'd like your parents to send a little, you know, headshot of you. It can be a serious school type one, or it can be a goofy one if you like, no matter what you prefer. This is homeschooling, so it's up to you. But just a nice shot of each of you if you're a student in the live class on any particular day, whether it's once a week or every day. And there'll be a shot of the Powells, of course, including Patrick here. And so that'll be nice to have at the end of the year. So send us that, please. And the email address is in the chat box. Okay, now also pertaining to the end of the school year here, what is it that we are striving to do, and what do we want to have at the end of this effort that we have been undertaking? Well, of course, learning history is something that we do at different times, at different levels in our lives, and this is still early for you guys. So especially if you're in the lower elementary, a little less so if you're in the upper elementary, you're learning history for the first, or probably the first, but maybe the second time, or you know, some of this is still going to be very, very new to you. So what we're doing here is building what we call a foundation. Right? A foundation is the beginning of knowledge. And later, over time, as you learn more, you keep going to school, and as a grown-up as well, continue to learn, you will build up a body of knowledge that's complete. And it takes time to do. So we're building a foundation, and that foundation has different parts to it. And probably the most important part going forward is going to be the most basic facts of history that help us to understand how it all fits together. And in this class, I'm calling those anchor facts. So, in this last month of the class, we are going to focus more and more on making sure that you have this foundation of anchor facts. And so I want to remind you now, going back to our class webpage, that we're where to get the latest facts practice and what we're going to do with that. So let me go ahead and share my screen. And here we have, I guess this is the upper elementary class webpage for last month. So it's the April webpage. But nonetheless, I just want to remind you, it's right here. We didn't start doing it yet, right? But I provided you in lecture 80, the anchor fact practice, facts practice 2A, including an answer key for the new one. So this is the lower L facts practice, right, with four new facts. And this is, pardon me, let me scroll over there. This is the answer key for that, right? So what we're going to do starting tomorrow is we're going to do this facts practice as we did earlier in the year to give you a chance to do this routine that is to kind of repeatedly work on these facts. It helps us to kind of gradually remember them automatically. It's part of it. We don't do a lot of it because it's not the most important. And I don't want you to think that history is all about memorization. It's not. The most important part of history is understanding. And so I want you to do some memorization because it is a good idea, but only some. So here's the anchor facts, and so I'd like to do this tomorrow. Starting tomorrow, at the beginning of class, we're going to do Facts Practice 2A. The upper elementary class one, of course, is a bit bigger. And we'll spend the first few minutes doing that each class from now on. And that will help us get where we want to be at the end of this course. Questions about that? Either of two things, questions or comments about either the class picture or the facts practice. All right then. So let's get to this. Oh, wait. There are. All of a sudden, hands shoot up. Okay, Abby, go ahead.
I checked in the chat window twice and I didn't see Mrs. Powell's email.
Oh, thank you for that. So what did I do wrong? Did I chat it to an individual? No, I did Mr. Powell to everyone. So how come it didn't come through? I'm going to do it again. Watch again. Okay, do you see that pop up?
Yes.
Thanks. Okay, there you go. I'm glad I could help. All right, there it is. So, okay. I'm not sure what that means, Jack. Those aren't real words. What did you mean?
He did it at the start of class, so people that came in later.
Okay, good. Thank you. All right, I'm glad I could redo it. All right, so now we're getting to World War II. Now, wait. Let's remind ourselves of what happened. What happened after World War I? Just to kind of get us in that frame of mind. What was America's experience of being a world police power? Was it all it was cracked up to be? Was it all nice and kind of feel good? Oh, yeah, we're taking care of the world, and isn't that nice? How did it work out, Abby?
It wasn't easy because it put America in danger. I mean, it was easy at first when it was just little countries like Cuba.
Okay.
But once it was big countries such as Europe and the World War, It was much harder and it was really dangerous.
Mm-hmm. And the result of World War I was about 117,000 Americans dead, 200,000 injured, right? So a huge number. And that was very painful. So what was it called when Americans decided, temporarily they said, we never want to do that again. We want to go back to the way things were. There was a president named Warren Harding who said, America, we're going to go back to, and he had a strange word for that. The way things were before. The normal way of doing things. What's that? What was his word for the normal way of doing things? It had the word normal in it. No, Anna's got this interesting phrase, status quo antebellum. But no, that is the way things were before the war. That's really good, Anna. I'm glad you brought that back up. Kind of like that. But there was a phrase for, you know, the normal way of doing things. Nemo?
Normalcy.
Normalcy. Yeah, exactly. Return to normalcy, it was called. All right, which meant return to independence, return to neutrality, a return to a policy for America of not getting involved in other people's wars. And so then when Germany started to show its true colors again, become a real big bully again, by voting for Adolf Hitler as their leader, and it was obvious that a new European war was coming, Americans said, we want to be neutral. They passed a new set of laws called the Neutrality Acts and said, we're not getting involved this time. Okay, but America didn't get involved again. So America didn't want to be in World War I, and it went anyway. America did get involved in World War II, and it ended up getting involved anyway, but not quite the same way. This time, it had to do with, the global scope of this war. Let me put the anchor facts away here and take you to a map that I didn't make, and I apologize if I had known it was. There are older versions of this map that are much better than this. And so this map, I think the colors are atrocious. And there's a few other things wrong with it. But it has, it's a map that shows us all the countries involved in World War II. And the only ones that aren't involved are the ones in gray. And they're sort of involved anyway. I mean, how can you not be, right? If all the ones in green are on one side and all the ones in blue are on the other side. So basically, if you're in gray, you're surrounded by the war anyway. So what are the sides of World War II here? Abby, put your hand down unless you have a question or comment. So the sides are green and blue on this map. And so you can see that America is green. Now, what is the reason for the dark green versus the light green? Well, the dark green is countries that were in the war from the start. And the light green is countries that entered the war later, including the United States, as you can see. Right? So the Americas were apart from the war for a long time and then only joined in later. The countries in blue were the parts of the world that were the enemy, basically. Germany, Italy, and over in Asia, you can see this territory here, all of which was part of the Japanese Empire. So the enemy over on this side was Japan. Okay? So, it's a huge war. And how did America get involved? Well, it had to do with this wonderful, warm place. Oh, wait, I gave it away. I didn't want you guys to see that just yet. I picked that the wrong time. This wonderful part of America over here, where everybody likes to go on holidays. Who's been over here on their vacations? Powell family puts their hand up. Patrick petted dolphins over there. This over here, are you guys seeing my cursor? I'm sorry. What is this over here, this part of America, which is the last state to join the Union? Patrick.
Hawaii,
yes, the wonderful islands of Hawaii. Now, I put that screen up by accident. I thought, I gave it away here. Does anybody know how did Hawaii come to be a part of the United States? Look where it is, all the way over here. Why is this a part of the United States? And we have this Pacific Ocean, this giant Pacific Ocean over here, right? And the United States grew to be include California in 1850. So the United States was all the way over to the West Coast. How did it grow into the Pacific? Very interesting, because look when Hawaii became a territory of the United States. Not a state, but a territory up here on this page. 1898. What happened in 1898? Something important having to do with Cuba. Where America changed into something new. Started to change. Abby?
Well, that was when Cuba rebelled against Spain and America decided to help Cuba.
Right, the Spanish-American War, right? And then in the Spanish-American War, what part of the world did the United States also take control of? Over here. I don't know why I've got this cursor. I can't control it. What was the Asian part of the world that the United States took over right here? Can you guys see my cursor? Everybody's got their Monday brains on. They're a little bit slower. The Philippines! Is everybody seeing my cursor? I think my cursor does jiggle over there, right? The Philippines over here. And look what's in between the United States and the Philippines. This Pacific Ocean over here has got, well, a little set of islands kind of smack dab in the middle there. And it's Hawaii. Yeah, so the United States was kind of spreading out into the Pacific in 1898 and decided, well, if we don't If the America doesn't take over Hawaii, look at this political cartoon. Right? Here are the islands of Hawaii. And here is so-called Uncle Sam, right, who represents the United States. And Uncle Sam is saying to Japan and Britain and France, stay away from this. Right? The takeover of Hawaii by the United States was another example of the United States being a what? As Theodore Roosevelt later called it. What was the United States doing here? I mean, it's not, the uniform's not quite... What do we call that? The fact that the United States is taking care of Hawaii, protecting it from Japan and Britain and France. What's the name for that? All right, Sigourney?
World Police Power.
Right, or World Police Power, or as Theodore Roosevelt said, International Police Power. Good. Right, so the United States took over Hawaii, acting again as a world police power. But that created a kind of interesting situation, because the United States was spreading into the Pacific. And if we look on this map of World War II, Japan was one of the enemies there. Japan was an ally of Germany in Europe. And so I think we got to this point at the end of last week where we said Japan looked at the United States controlling Hawaii and the Philippines and they said, look, if we want to be a bully over here, which is what Japan's doing, all this blue stuff over here was already territory that Japan had conquered in Asia. So Japan was looking at the United States and they said, if we want to be an empire over here, you can bet that the United States is going to get involved. So what should we do? We should... Patrick, you remember this part?
Well, I do remember how they got involved in World War II.
Well, that's what I'm asking. Say it.
Well, they planned a sneak attack on Hawaii, even though it didn't quite work out.
Okay, there we go. The Japanese planned a sneak attack on this American base over here, where all the American ships are, at a place called Pearl Harbor, and the United States was forced into the war. Right. All right, so here's this world. It's a big world with all these big enemies and two really powerful enemies in Germany and Japan. And we haven't talked about this much this year because it hasn't been that important yet. But some of you History at Our House veterans will remember this challenge. When you get involved in a war and you've got these powerful enemies, what's something that you need to do in order to succeed in a war against powerful enemies? Maybe I didn't phrase the question the way we used to phrase it, but I didn't want to make it too easy on you guys. Sigourney?
Make allies.
Make allies, okay. And, all right, now somebody else here. What's the rule for choosing allies in a war? If I have to give you the first few words, you only get half points. What's the rule for choosing allies in a war? For full points, last chance. Okay, Henry or Wyatt might get full points.
This is why, well, the enemy, your enemy is my enemy.
Oh, not quite. Try that again. You had it. The enemy.
The enemy is.
All right. Wyatt's got us going here. The enemy. And keep going here. Finish it off. Nemo.
The enemy of my enemy is my temporary ally.
Oh, there we go. All right, teamwork. All right, Wiley gets half the points, Nemo gets half the points. All right. So, the enemy of my enemy is my temporary ally. So, if your enemies are the guys in blue, then you look around in the world and you say, well, who else has that them as enemies? And so the United States, of course, was on the side of France and England like they had been in World War I. But something that happened in World War II was that the United States chose to be an ally of Russia right here, which I think everybody who's done any world geography knows is the biggest country in the world, right? And back then it was called the Soviet Union, but that's just a technicality. So this is Russia, really huge country, and as you can see, there's Germany over here, and there's Japan over here, right? So it's got enemies on both sides, and the United States chose to make Russia its ally. But this was not a comfortable thing to do, because the United States stood for freedom and individual rights. And Russia was a lot more like Germany and Japan. It was not a country of freedom. In Russia, the people had a kind of government that is called communism. And the rule for how you're supposed to live in communism goes like this. From each according to his ability, to each according to his need. Let me type that one out for you in the chat box. This is a complicated phrase. We're going to come back to it, but I want to get started on it now. Okay. From each according to his ability, to each according to his need. All right, so what this means is, in communism, you organize a society and you make people work based on their ability. But how do you reward them? What do you get for your hard work? Do you get to keep what you produced and what you earned? Abby?
No, they just give you something that you need.
Right. Exactly. To each according to his need. Right, exactly. So the idea in communism is you don't have a right to your own life. It's the exact opposite of the United States. In communism, other people get what you make. Whoever has more need than you gets to have what you made. Because you have the ability, you don't get to have it. And so, yeah, this form of government is absolutely terrible. And Russia has abandoned it. And there's only a couple countries left in the world that are crazy enough to still have it. But, because it really does, it's not only not practical, it's just a terrible way to live. People don't get to pursue their own happiness. And so the United States was a country where you had a right to pursue your own happiness. In Russia, you had no right to your own life. You had to work, and anybody that had a need got to claim your life and have what you made. So it's the exact opposite. But even if you don't like another country, sometimes if you're in a big world war, you have to be there. Now, this was what was great about what Nemo said. You don't have to be their friend, but what's the difference when you have to choose, you know, the enemy of my enemy is what? What's the difference, Nemo?
A temporary ally.
Right, exactly. You can agree to work with them temporarily. And you know, that's not the same thing as being a friend. Even though, as you may have heard the expression before, and when you go and study history in other places, you probably will hear people say, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And it's not true. We don't choose our friends because of who their enemies are, right? We choose our friends because of how good they are, how nice they are, what we share in common in a positive way. And the Soviet Union and the United States were not friends, but they were temporary allies. They agreed to work together to fight Germany and Japan. And together, and with England and France and the other countries, especially because of the United States, which was by far the most powerful, they defeated these countries. Germany, and this time now, when the United States decided to fight Germany, they weren't going to be all generous and nice and say, okay, as long as you have a democracy, everything will be okay after the war. This time the United States said, we are going to conquer Germany completely. And so they made a plan with Russia and their allies to completely conquer Germany, and they achieved it. And at the end of the war, Russia, let's see here if I can annotate this just briefly. The colors are so bad, I'm scared to annotate this map. But basically, you've got Russia coming in from one side, right? And the United States and its allies invading from the other side is what happened. And the reason why I'm pointing this out to you is to show you what happened at the end of the war. I'm going to now zoom in and show you a picture of Germany at the end of the war with America as a police power. So here's what happened to Germany. It was conquered, taken over by its enemies. And all of the colored territory here are the different parts of Germany that were taken over by different countries. And so you can see that the United States was in charge of part of it. Its ally Britain was in charge of another part, and France was in charge of this part, and Russia was in charge of this part, and the rest of this was given back to Poland. That's what this flag is. Okay, and then there's some neat stuff. Probably the neatest part of it here, the trickiest part of it, is what's in the center here, which is really weird. You see red, blue, green, and orange again. Which is weird. When they conquered Germany, the different countries that were working on conquering it went to the capital city of Berlin, and they agreed to divide that up as well. Now, so this was... Now, what happened after this, though, was part of the problem was the enemy of my enemy is my temporary ally. The United States and Russia did not believe in the same things. Right? The United States stood for freedom. Russia stood for communism. So when they conquered different parts of Germany, they expected to make different kinds of governments there. The United States wanted to defend freedom, wanted to promote freedom, wanted to help people to be free. The Soviet Union or Russia wanted to conquer them and control them. So sadly, at the end of the war, we get the division of Europe, the division of Germany starting, and the whole division of Europe into two sides. Here's Germany again, right? And we got the Russian side, and we have the Western side protected by America. And everything here that was in red was conquered by Russia and controlled by it. Everything on the blue side was protected by the United States at the end of the war and afterwards. And from this point on, the United States decided, well, we can't leave. We have saved Europe, and we can't leave from here because our temporary ally has now become a new threat. And if we leave, they will attack these countries that we just saved. And then what will we do? Did we give up all these American lives and did we fight so hard just to abandon it all? So the United States decided we're going to have to stay and we're going to have to take care of Europe. We're going to have to police it and protect it. But this was going to be a new and difficult project for the international police power. Because at the end of the war, the United States had developed a new, powerful, terrifying weapon. If we go back to our Anchor Fact Timeline, right? And look, remember, at our symbol and our Anchor Fact Facts practices. We have a symbol right here. Who knows what this is and why this is going to be the picture that we will use to help us kind of remind ourselves of World War II. What is this picture? Jeremy?
The atomic bomb.
An atomic bomb, which is what, Jeremy? You don't have to tell me the science, but, you know, kind of, what is this kind of a bomb?
A bomb that can destroy cities.
Yes, right. That's how I would describe it as well. A bomb that is so powerful that these are two bombs that the United States used to attack, they're not the bombs, but they're what's called a mushroom cloud, right? Because it's a cloud, but it looks like a mushroom. And the bomb is so powerful that it creates kind of its own weather pattern temporarily, and makes a cloud in the shape of a mushroom from the powerful explosion. And as Jeremy said, the bomb is so powerful that you can destroy an entire city with one bomb. At the end of the war, the United States had developed this type of bomb and used it against Japan to force Japan to surrender. But pretty soon, the United States was not going to be the only country in the world that had this type of terrible weapon. And so a new challenge was going to arrive in the world. The United States was going to have to police the world, and it was going to be a world that had atomic bombs in it, or what we call now nuclear weapons. This is going to be an incredibly hard project. So we're going to see that after World War II, the United States got involved in what's called the Cold War. I'll explain that, and we'll keep going with the story here. Okay, so final reminder for today. Facts practice tomorrow. So I want everybody to have a printed out version of it ready to go. We're going to do that facts practice drill like we did in the past, right? So I will just start a timer, and everybody will try to fill it in as quickly as possible. And that way we'll have those facts kind of memorized, and we'll be able to carry them with us, hopefully, when we're done with the class. Okay, that's it for today, folks. America has saved the world in World War II. Now it's going to have to police the world in the Cold War. Oh my gosh. Here we go. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.